Hey, y'all. Welcome to the Working Dog Wednesday Show on the Fueled by Joy Working Dog Podcast, brought to you by Joy Dog Food. Now, I'm your host, Mike Green. I'm the owner and operator of Cottonville Road Kennels, located in Norwood, North Carolina. I want to let you know, for more information about Joy Dog Food or to find a Joy dealer near you, visit joydogfood.com. Now, let's get on to the show. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Green. I'm your host today for the Fueled by Joy Working Dog Podcast, and it's a pleasure to be back on. I've been away for a few weeks, a lot of personal things going on, life in general, and as many of you know, this time of the year is really busy for a lot of us, and so it doesn't change for Houndsman, so or podcast host. So we do appreciate you guys tuning in and appreciate you being patient. I've had many messages and text messages wanting to know where the Beagle program is and why it hadn't been on, but here we are, and we appreciate you tuning in. We got a real good show lined up for you today, and we have two houndsmen on with us today, and we've been looking forward for this. Had this lined up for a couple three weeks now, and we're just now being able to get it together so that we can get this podcast recorded for you guys. And as always, if you want to email me about anything, suggestions or comments, you can reach me at mike@joydogfood.com. And also, don't forget that you can always find out more about Joy Dog Food if you go to joydogfood.com. You can find retailers and all the information, nutritional information that you're looking for there. So appreciate you tuning in. And today we have Mitch Gould and Derek Bowen with us. Been trying to get this lined up, and we finally did it, guys. And so I want to welcome both of you to the show.
Hey, thanks, Mike, for having
me. Yeah, we really appreciate it, Mike.
Awesome. Well, we did a little bit of pre-show conversation, and we're going to kind of cut back through this here, but we want to go ahead and get to it. Mitch, I'll start with you. So you guys are up in West Virginia. I'm down here in Carolina. There's not a lot of difference between our running styles or rabbits. We do have swampers down here, and you guys have hillbillies and cottontails up there. I believe that's what you got up there. I don't know if y'all got, do y'all have hillbillies? I may be wrong on that.
We have snowshoe hare. Just maybe about an hour and a half from like where me and Derek live. But it's they're mountain hare. It's a little different than going, you know, up north. There's not a lot of them, but we do have a few. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Hmm. Yeah, I didn't realize you guys.
But no swampers or anything like that.
Yeah. Swampers, man. That's a whole nother world. It's like that horse on the Wizard of Oz. It's a rabbit of a different. I'm telling you, man. It's just you never know what you can run. One, he runs one way. You run another, and he runs a whole different style. You're wondering if they're well. You just wonder. So you want to see your dog really go to work, though, buddy. You put him on a blue tail down here. One of what we call the small head blue tails or small head swampers. Mm-hmm. Man, that dude will make your dogs. I mean, it'll make them contemplate just quitting rabbits and running deer because they really have to tie in and work that track to be able to turn them. So
I've always wanted to go run swampers. Just never have made it. You know. Me and Derek both coach and have kids and just hard to do everything, but definitely swampers are on my bucket list.
Yeah, we've talked about it several times, like trying to get away to get down there to run them sometimes, but maybe one of these days.
Well, you guys are welcome to come down here and get some of that loving.
All right.
Because we got plenty of them too, buddy, and they will take over. I'll tell you this, and then we'll get further into the conversation. But a swamp rabbit, and I've never run hares, so I don't really know exactly how they breed or their habitat or whatnot. But one thing that I'll say about a swamp rabbit is that they can survive anywhere. It's not just the swamps, but and they reproduce so fast, like. It is so hard for predators to get. They'll catch cottontails all day, you know. I say all day, but very easily. But when it comes to these blue tails down here, man, it's like you can't, you, they just populate so fast. I mean, it's,
I didn't know that.
It's unreal at how quickly you can come in. And I don't shoot a lot of rabbits from year to year, but let's just say if I went into a 30 acre area, man goes in and hunts that on cottontail, he's probably not going to want to take out more than about 10 or 12 rabbits in a year in a 30 acre place, because you got 20% of your rabbits are going to die from natural causes, you know, ticks, fleas, pneumonia, things like that. Then you got the ones that never make it out of the bed when they're born. Then you got your predator factor. You got your highway factor, you know. So everything wants to eat a rabbit or kill a rabbit. And so if you go in and kill 10 or 12 on a 30-acre place, you probably don't want to kill any more there that year. But if it's eat up with swamp rabbits, dude, you can go in there and kill 25.
Huh.
And come back. Well,
I can tell you, in West Virginia, 10 or 12 in West Virginia, we don't want to kill probably two in some of these spots. We just don't have a lot of dense populations here, you know.
Yeah.
We have rabbits, but not like some of these other places, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that, man, you get into the swampers down here, you might not kill a lot of them in a day because they're really hard to run and they're hard to kill. I mean, they'll climb trees. They'll do whatever. They'll go up inside of holler trees. They'll go in holes. They'll swim across a whole pond. I mean, they don't care. I mean, I've seen them. I don't know if you've ever done much duck hunting, but you hunt a wood duck and you wound a wood duck. A lot of times they'll hit the water and they'll swim down and they'll wedge themselves up under a lap or a log or something so that they don't float back to the top. And then they'll just drown. They'll just die there. Well, swamp rabbit, it's the same thing. Like, he will, if he's going to die, like, he's going to go somewhere to die that you can't get him.
I mean, he's going out guns blazing, isn't he?
I'm telling you, dude, they don't know. I mean, and I start all my puppies on swampers. I want them to be.
I'd imagine so. Yeah.
Yeah. You can run a swamp rabbit, dude. You can make a cottontail wish he didn't exist. And that's just
the truth
of
the matter.
Especially with our style of dogs, you know. Mm-hmm. But Mitch, so you're up in West Virginia. You've been in the beagling for about 27 years, started around 1996, and you come from a family of houndsmen. So tell me a little bit about your family and the houndsmanship there in, and then how that got you to beagles.
Okay. I mean, Dad, the hardcore coon hunter, my grandpa was a fox hunter. My other grandpa on the other side of the family had beagles. But they were just kind of, you know, some average gun dogs at the time. And, by the time I was old enough to really hunt, he didn't have the beagles anymore. But if you go back several generations, a lot of coon hunters, bear hunters, squirrel hunter, you know, different types of hounds. So that, you know, I just grew up chasing dogs. I mean, we always had, litter of coon dog puppies, you know, running around, and lived on a farm out in the country. So I had, you know, I could kind of take them hounds even as a little guy, you know, and be all over the place with them. And, that kind of got my passion for hunting dogs in general. So, you know, that's where I would attribute my start to, you know, chasing coon dogs, honestly.
Yeah. A lot of us got that, kind of got that same thing. And like I told you earlier, I'm generation after generation beagler, but you know, we've had coon dogs, deer dogs, and everything along the way. And it's just that kind of DNA of a houndsman, I guess, you know, to be with a pack of dogs. I love to still hunt deer, but I also love to run deer dogs, you know? And that's, I think it's just part of it. So, through that, and you decided you was going to go into beagles. Do you remember the first beagle that you got?
Yeah, I do. Dale Prunty gave me a little female called West Virginia Bess, and I ran her for better part of a year, and that was the first dog that I ran for Dale. And then he gave me a dog that I actually kept, till, I guess you would say, the first one I kept that was all mine, you know, called her Dynamite. She's actually in that painting in the background of the video, Mike, come to think of it. But so that would have been, you know, like I said, late 90s or something like that. That would have been kind of the beginning of the rabbit dog addiction.
and an addiction. It really is. It really is one. And so you got Bess from Dale Pruney, was she already running, started?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. She had already placed in some bigger hunts. And, you know, when I met Dale, I was in the Coon Dogs, and he invited us to a rabbit trial, and I really thought that was cool. And we had a lot of rabbits at my house, you know, on the farm. And it just kind of made sense. And he said, "Hey, you want to run, a bagel for me?" I said, yeah, definitely. And, I think he knew what he was doing, you know, I think he planted a little seed there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the turning point there. The tree dog started to little by little get left in the dust, you know?
Yeah, I can understand that. That definitely the way that it went with me over the years. I got to walk 3 miles to get to this dog treater. I can sit here and do like Pappy did and just wait on him to bring him back.
Yeah. But she, the best dog, she was out of White River Lulu and Fire River Michael, which was a great cross. And I ended up with her litter mate brother shortly after, which was Big Jake, that kind of became the foundation for our breeding program all those years ago. You know, he was really special, and he also came from Dale.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Good history there too with Dale, and having that connection to somebody like that, and being able to kind of, like you said, have that seed planted, and then, you know, he got to watch it kind of blossom and bloom and grow, and you've been able to take it on for these many years now. 27 years, that's pretty good. Derek, tell me a little bit about how you got started in this addiction of rabbit dogging.
Well, let's see. When I was in grade school, middle school, Dad always had Beagles. Well, we were more of a weekend warrior kind of, you know, we go on the weekends and we'd be rabbit hunting. My grandpa, my great grandpa, they always ran foxhounds. Actually, I think my great grandpa and Mitch's great grandpa, they used to run foxhounds together. So, cool. You know, it's weird how it figured out, but, we'd always go. You know, I was 12, 13, 14. We'd always go rabbit hunting every Saturday. After all that, we just had farm dogs. They weren't trial dogs. They were just farm dogs. We were just rabbit hunters. In about 2007, let me back up a little bit. Old Dad's dogs just kind of died off, and we didn't replace any. So there's probably about a 4 or 5 year window where we didn't have any dogs. And, you know, I played baseball in high school, travel baseball. And when I was in college, I was playing baseball. About in 2007, you know, I thought, let's get back in this dog thing, you know, because, you know, I always had the itch for it. And things were starting to slow down. My sister was out of high school. Dad had a little bit more downtime. So we was looking around on the internet. We came across Mitch's number. Ben Hall, which he ran a good bit with us, and we called him up and said, "Hey, you guys got any, you know, dogs for sale?" And I didn't know Mitch or Ben at all, you know, but they had this little blue tick female. She was out of Simply Irresistible and a Blue Ninja female over there. So me and Dad went and looked at her, and I just fell in love with her, and we took her home. She was running at the time. We took her home, and it was on after that, buddy. I was out every day. I remember after practice, Dad would drive the dog up, and we'd go running after baseball practice was in college. And long story short, it just I got to know Mitch really well. Got to know, you know, all the guys. Went to a trial, and put that little female in a trial, and she won her first cast, and buddy, after that I was hooked.
That's a pretty good lineup right there. And you can kind of see in that, as you explain that, how kind of all that kind of fell into a bottleneck and kind of just kind of hooked you in right there from that point with you guys having that. And then having that connection too of your grandparents, your great grandparents running together. Great-granddaddy's running together. And so, man, that's awesome. And just seeing how that houndsman tradition just kind of just as it was in one and the other, and then you guys come together in the long run, that's pretty cool right there. That's a good story of how that works. And, you know, one of the things that we run into a lot are people that want to criticize one side or the other. I don't get into the arguments of what's this or what's that or what style's this and what style's that. But I want to make a point to the listeners to know that when we're talking about field trialing here, we're talking mainly about the hunting beagle format for UKC, the hound and handler type style hunting. And so you guys don't kind of get lost out there in podcast world, you don't get kind of lost in translation here, what we're talking about. And if we talk about something else, we'll make sure that we mention what style or format that is. And so with that, you kind of just kind of bottleneck into that, you guys come together. So tell me, kind of explain to the listeners out there how that relationship came together, Mitch. Just kind of lay that out for me.
Well, you know, we were, as I mentioned there about Big Jake, kind of being the foundation, and there we were starting to see a lot of nice puppies out of him. And even by that time, it's a lot of his grand puppies. And he produced a dog called Heat 'Em Up Keita, who's in the Hall of Fame, produced, you know, a whole bunch of dogs. And this blue tick female Derek's talking about was out of the Simply Irresistible dog, which would have been Keita's littermate brother. So, you know, you can see that kind of coming down to that third generation. When Derek and Tim got T's, I can very vividly remember talking to Tim on the phone. I would talk to Tim probably more at the beginning than Derek, before I got to know Derek more. And they were always running dogs. And I can remember one day talking to him, and it was in the evening, and I said, what you into? He said, it's got done running. And I said, well, I thought you ran this morning. He said, I did. And
my kind of man. Guys,
holy cow. I mean, these guys were running 7 days a week, and they were running two times a day getting ready for these field trials with Striptease. Striptease was her name.
Yeah.
And Tease made grand pretty quick, and she was a powerful little dog. And I remember thinking, man, these are the kind of guys I want to be in business with. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the more I got to know them, the more I got to know them, they were men of high integrity.
Right.
And that to me is more important than anything. So we started to just continue to build this kennel and this breeding program. You know, you can't, it's very difficult to build anything by yourself and work a full-time job and family you know, Derek and Tim, you know, they've been there from the beginning, and, you know, putting the time in those dogs that a lot of people talk about putting time in like that, but very few actually do.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, and it paid off. I mean, they had a lot of success early and often, and, you know, it's paid off. So, but, you know, just over time, you know, you begin to trust somebody more. And the main thing is we all kind of had, and Derek, you probably agree, we had a similar version of what a dog should be, you know, and kind of what our mission was going to be. You know, we wanted to reproduce dogs like X and like Y. And, you know, everybody pulling in the same direction, you know, it didn't take long to get going, you know.
Well, you know, in working together like that, there you go. You're pulling in X and Y, and you're wanting this right here. You collectively, you know what you don't want, you know, and when you can spot it, when I can spot it, you can spot it. Everybody can spot it that's in the program of anything, whether we're talking about dogs or we're talking about a workforce, you know, you know what you want, you know what you need. And then, you know, you were talking about the integrity of the people there, them and bringing them in there of high integrity. You need you agree with this. I believe y'all agree with this. You need a dog when you're breeding this dog and that dog together and you're coming together. You want these dogs to also have a high level of integrity. And a lot of people don't understand, how does a dog have integrity? And it comes down to just that baseline, what that dog is, has the innate ability to do and does it right, you know. And so I know a lot, that's not a word that's used a lot talking about dogs, but I guess it should be when we know, well, that dog just told a lie, or that's a lying rascal right there, you know, whatever, when you're talking about getting open on tracks or whatnot. And so it is good to have a dog that you can trust. Same way when you've got a group of people coming together. And just to make mention so the listeners know, Tim is Derek's dad.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure we make that connection there. So you got you guys working together right here, coming together. So that's a great history of bringing Heat 'Em Up Kennels to the forefront of for you guys and what you want to do together. So that's awesome. So Derek is there. What would you add to that process as far as you and Tim on this side and Mitch coming in, you guys coming together? Would you, do you agree with that? Or what was some of the characteristics you guys were hoping to be able to bring and to collect I guess we'll call that in that relationship for a kennel?
Well, what I figured out was these dogs hunt, you know what I mean? And the way they drive a rabbit, it was unreal. And I remember telling Dad, I said, these are the real deal. These are a little better dogs than what we had when we were rabbit hunting every weekend. And I remember talking to Mitch about it. And because I was, you know, I didn't know what to do with the dog or how to do the dog. I learned everything from Mitch and Ben and Chris Reynolds. You know, I just thought you just put them in a pack and run them. Boy, was I wrong. but when yeah. when the whole solo thing came in and I saw the, you know, we solo our dogs a lot, especially at a young age.
Right.
When I saw what that does to a dog by themselves, because I saw it with T's and I saw them with a couple other dogs, I mean, it brought out the best of them dogs, and that made me a believer out of me. And we had the same, you know, we were talking and we've had the same style, you know, what we want from a dog, how we want to run a dog. It was just like the stars lined up, and we just had the same interest in all the dogs that we had.
And that is where a relationship grows from, is that same interest of whether you're putting together a business plan or whatever it may be. Or like you said, you guys coach ball and do things like that. I mean, it comes together there at the same time as searching for those things. And I just want to kind of touch back a little bit on what you mentioned about your solo program. So like for me, you know, for me, soloing is like the pinnacle. Like this is where you've got to be. You've got to be able to, you know, you hear a lot of people say, especially in the social media world that we live in, you know, they're looking for a jump dog. They're looking for this dog. They're looking for that dog. You know, having that dog that can truly, truly, not just in thought, not just in word, but that can actually truly go jump, run, and circle its own rabbit and let that rabbit be the teacher of how well that dog actually how much that dog is learning. So when you started soloing your dogs, was that something you grew into? I guess this is for both of you. Is it something that you grew into, or is it just something that you knew you had to do or somebody had told you need to do?
Well, for me, growing up a coon hunter, you know, that was a pretty common thing. You know, my dad and Dale, you know, Dale was a coon hunter before he became a bigler. So they drilled into my head, you solo a dog that you want to make the best out of. You know, not just to go win field trials, but if you want to get the best out of that dog, you know, you got to put time in it, wear boot leather out by itself. And when I got into bigles, that wasn't real common. I mean, you would hear guys talking at at the clubs, and they're talking about, you know, running 4, 5, 6, 7 dogs every evening. And it, I can remember, you know, it just wasn't something a lot of guys did, you know, in the bigger world at that time. And, so for me, it was just secondhand. I mean, I didn't know, I honestly didn't know any other way, Mike, you know, and to be honest with you, I had to learn that Biggles were not coon dogs. Yeah. So, and what I mean by that is they have to be banged too. They got to learn to run a pack.
That's right.
You know, and that's something I think Derek and I both have done. You know, we've kind of learned over the years how to give a dog what it needs, not what we want it to have necessarily. Excuse me. But, you know, sometimes you can tell that dog needs banged a little bit, or it's time for it to see more dogs. And it's time to pull it back. It's time to go back to solo time. And, you know, I tell people, anytime somebody asks me for advice, I tell them, you know, if you take a dog, and I call it the 30-day challenge, and you run that dog 30 times in a row by itself, if you don't see an improvement in something, whether it's better independent jump ability, whether it can hold the track better, better check work, something, if you don't see improvement and you're honest with me, I'll buy you a steak dinner. And I ain't bought any steak dinners yet. So
you won't either.
You know, because it, you know, for a lot of guys, they don't think it's fun.
That's
right. Think it's very boring. You know, they think it's funner to watch 4 or 5 dogs go through there, 4 or 5 wide, and, you know, like Talladega, and, you know, that's all well and good. And heck, I enjoy that too. But, you know, it all depends on what your goal is. You know, I think the biggest difference, Mike, between this style of dog and you, some other formats is, you know, and I think you probably agree with the style dog you have, Mike. I want a dog to try to kill its pack mates. I don't care about this working together stuff. Hey, I want this dog to operate as a pack and feed off each other and building your pack. And, you know, I hear guys talk about that in that context, and I don't really understand it. But there's nothing wrong with that. You know, everybody to their own. But in order to have that dog ready to go out there and kick butt, you know, I believe that solo time is, you know, awfully important.
Yeah.
Right. And I enjoy, I much rather see a dog run a rabbit by itself than I would a pack of dogs. Because you're out there with that dog and you learn so much about that dog. You know, you're the good and the bad. And I just like concentrating on that dog and just seeing, you know, every move of that dog, you know, through that track, you know, what he's doing or how he's working a track or, you know, how he's hunting by himself. You know, I enjoy that. I enjoy listening to that dog just burn up a rabbit by itself. That's it. And a lot of people don't, but, you know, I actually enjoy it.
Man, there's, to me, when I get a puppy started, when that puppy comes back from the train, so I send all of mine to the training pen. A friend of ours has a training pen, pretty big one. Actually, he's got like grade school, high school, and college. I mean, he's got 3 pens, and it's pretty nice to be able to have that. And it's full of swamp rabbits. I mean, it is like all the cards are against your dog. when you get out of the little grade school pen, you know, the little half acre grade school / sight chasing pen, and then it's 5 acre, and then it's 20 acre, you know. And the one thing that I do is when they come out of that pen, before I pack them, before I run them with anything, when they come out of that 20 acre pen and I bring them here to the house, their first morning, which is usually the next morning, if I'm not at church, which I'm at church every Sunday, but if I don't have church that Sunday, excuse me, if it's not a Sunday and I don't have church or meetings, I'm going to be in the woods with that dog as early as possible, just soon as we can get him on the ground. Now, granted, I will take him to a rabbit-heavy area. So his first time out in the, what we call the real wild. I mean, the 20-acre pen's pretty wild, but when we get him out here in a new place he hadn't ever been, drop him on the ground and let him go. To me, man, it is just like, I don't know. I mean, it's like the greatest thing to see this puppy that you raised go to out here and then solo that rabbit first thing. And if they don't do so
nothing
good,
like it.
Yeah, nothing, yep. Nothing like it. And if they don't do so good, that's okay. I wasn't expecting them just to lock on and just burn it down mm-hmm. for 2 hours. I just want to see that they've got the drive. And that solo yep. program, a good, healthy solo program. And I love what you said about like a 30-day challenge. That is awesome because there's no way you're buying a steak dinner. Now, if they do it right, if they do it, you're not buying a steak dinner. And with them being honest and doing it right, being able to put that together when it comes to training like that. And like you said, Mitch, people find it to be boring, that it's not fun. I got a good buddy of mine. I won't mention his name on here, but it's Ken. And I pick with him a lot about, you know, he'll say, oh, that dog would jump and run its own rabbit. I'm like, well, how in the world do you know? You don't know. You drop 5 or 6 dogs on the ground at a time. Ken, I love yeah. you. When you listen to this, Ken, I love you. You know I do. And he knows it's true. But he'll say, oh, I'm going to. But it's not just him. It's many, like you said, yeah. it's many, many, many guys. They don't want to drive 30 minutes with one dog. And right. I can't wait to drive 30 minutes with one dog.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. even if I get disappointed.
Well, there's this concept out there that we've all heard a lot of, you know, for years. Put them down and let the cream rise to the top and call the rest, you know, and the guys will run 6, 7, 8 dogs. And that means puppies, 4-year-olds, grands, you know, whatever, they all go. And if you don't hack it, you know, you get blowed up, then you're out, you know, and
yeah.
I'll keep the best one of the bunch. You know, we've all heard that. And the problem with that, and hey, if that's worked for you, great. But what ends up happening is you're really focusing on one trait. And that's pack pressure.
That's right.
Which, hey, that's a very important thing, which is why I think dogs need banged and soloed.
Yeah.
But, so you're going to end up pulling a dog. You're going to say, that's the best dog. But it's the one with the best pack pressure. But was it the one with the most hunting ability? Was it the one with the most heart? You know, there's a lot of other factors. You may be calling a dog that you don't think, you know, it didn't have the cream rising. It has every trait that you want, but it needed some solo time for that pack pressure. So now you've probably called the most talented dog in your system. So, you know, and I know there's people who listen to this and think, oh my gosh, you're crazy, you know, and that's fine. You know, there's more than one way to skin a cat and sure. That's how you like to train your dogs. Hey, that's great.
Absolutely.
But, that's just my opinion, you know, take it for what it's worth. But, you know, I think every little dog is a little problem to be solved.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How much solo does it need? How much brace time? What does it need braced with?
That's right.
What are you seeing? What do you, if you're watching the dogs run, what is that dog doing? Is it telling you that it needs more solo time? Is it telling you it needs to run with a little stronger dog braced maybe? You know, so that's the part I enjoy the most is figuring out that little problem, you know, how to get the most out of them. That's what I love the most.
Yeah, yeah. Filling the holes is what I call that. When they're showing you their holes, and there again, not everybody's got the experience to look at one dog run and identify the holes immediately. But that's why we have in the houndsman and women world, we have mentors that will, you know, you guys get the phone calls, I get the phone calls. Hey, I got a dog doing this. What would you suggest? And the first thing that I suggest. Is first I ask them, when you soloed the dog, did it do this? Well, I've never soloed it. Well, then how do you know? How do you know mm-hmm. that this is a problem when it might not be that dog? Maybe there's another dog yeah. that's causing this problem and causing that dog to act that way. You know, and so solo them all. I mean, I still solo my dogs when they're 8 years old. You know what I mean? Do they need it? No, yep. But is it fun for me to see them still get in there and hit it and go and roll with it? I think that's the only way that a person, and there again, folks out there listening, this is us having a conversation, you guys listening in, and we appreciate you listening, but this, to me, this is the only way that you can honestly say to somebody, old Big John over here can jump and run his own rabbit. Because there's a difference between running a rabbit by yourself and soloing a rabbit. Running a rabbit by yourself, you got a pack of dogs here, dog leaves down over here, and they're running this rabbit over here the whole time by themselves.
So I'm going to tell you something. I'll tell you, we're talking about the running aspect a lot, Mike, but Derek, how many dogs? We have this conversation a lot. How many dogs? I mean, I think there's a lot of dogs out there that if you turn them loose by themselves, they're not going. They're not going to go jump a rabbit.
No.
You know, you watch them in that field trial following dogs around.
Yeah.
And
in the hunting.
You know, I think some of that's trainer error.
Yeah. Right. I always think of it as if you're the last dog standing, okay, how embarrassing is it going to be if you're just standing there, you know, the last part of the hunt, you know? How embarrassing would that be, you know? You want a dog that's, you know, if everybody's out of the pack, you want a dog that still is going to go jump a rabbit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
And you know, we like a dog maybe to go hunt deeper than most, Mike. But, you know, even somebody that claims to be a rabbit hunter, they need to get off the path and go find a rabbit. You know what I mean? You know, I don't care if they go 400 or 500 yards, but you at least tell me you don't want it on the path, you know, by itself.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of dogs at trials. I would be willing to bet if they're not going by themselves.
Yeah.
They're not going to go. You're going to have to walk them in there. And it's probably the biggest hole in Biggles in general, in my opinion, is that we have, because there's been so much focus for 50 years on check work, pack pressure, speed, nose, and all these other things. That, and I'm not going to get into, I don't want to mention a bunch of formats, but some formats are more to blame for that than others, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And they don't focus enough on hunt. They're not focused on what dogs hunted in that pack. So what do you end up happening? Just like they did in the coon dogs, guys will breed for the rules. So you're not focused on that independent hunt that's really important that our forefathers, you know, that had hunting big, just hunted. That was important to them.
Yeah.
You know, so they paid attention to those kind of things. So you get 3 and 4 generations of some of these guys that bred dogs and that they wasn't paying attention to hunt. That's mm-hmm. not something they were real, that, you know, that wasn't, they knew the judges wasn't looking at it that hard. You know, it wasn't something that really evaluated. So you end up right now with a lot of Biggles that have, well, we'll just call it average hunt or less. I mean, it's just, you see it a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, AKC did the same thing. They focused hard on track control, you know, keeping it between their legs with their nose down, and they focus and they bred for it. Like, again, breeding for the rules, breeding for what the judges yeah. wanted, and not the ability of the actual hound that they're working with. And then what you ended up with was generation after generation. And then the nose is down, the tracks between their legs, and that's great and wonderful, but they took the hunt out, and so they're walking around with sticks, beating on stuff, saying, you know, trying to jump a rabbit. Now they're yeah. now they're focused on, and I'm vice president of our AKC club down here, and their focus now for the past few several years has been on bringing that hunt back, making the dog a
good
dog,
for them.
You
yeah.
know, and they're yeah. less trying to jump a rabbit for it as it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago and beyond.
Yeah.
Now it's, you know, cut them and let the judges see how they do what they do. And that's great. Because we do get into that focused on what the judges want or focus on the rules.
Sure.
You
know? Yeah, sure.
It's not good.
You know, that's one thing I'll say, you know, the format that Derek and I run, and I know you run it too, Mike, it ain't perfect either. But, mm-hmm. you know, one thing's for sure is we're not going to get off the path and go beat brush. The dogs are going to have to, if we, and you know, if we're out there 90 minutes and we don't have a bark because these dogs can't find one, that's on them.
That's right.
You know, we're not going to go kick brush. And that's the, mainly the reason I was drawn to this format, even as a kid, you know, being a coon hunter, how important is, you know, dogs to go. You want them to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I got into Biggles, you know, Dale had a strain of Biggles that would go, and I would see the difference at those hunts. And you know, White River Lulu was an Arnold's chubby bred dog that goes back to Northern Michigan, and those dogs would go find one, you know, deep hunt if needed. And I was really drawn to that because that wasn't real common in Biggles then. You know, you didn't see that a lot.
Yeah,
a lot more close hunters, you know, and you're starting to see more of dogs with more of that style now, but I've always been drawn to that, you know.
And that, you know, you mentioned about the dogs going deeper and things like that. That's the way most of us are, at least in our style of dog. You know, I cut mine off the tailgate. I don't care if they go 250 yards, whatever. Just go, you know, and do your thing. And that's, you know, if that's what it takes. One person might say, well, they passed a lot of rabbits between here and there. Well, maybe they did. But they went and they found the rabbit. When nobody else was finding rabbits, they went and found that rabbit, you know, that we could run.
Yep.
So
yep.
It pays off. It really does to have that. And that solo, man, I just can't – I personally can't preach it enough at how important it is to have that program in some way, fashion, or form, a healthy solo program. And then, too, be aware of, you know, you solo them too much, and you got to watch for that over-independence, you know, to where they won't hark to a pack. You know, we want them to do it on their own, but also be ready to party when the time's right, you know.
Yep.
So that means a lot as
well. I'll tell you something else I think it helps, too, Mike. You know, when we have a litter of pups here, we keep a lot of pups in-house. You know, we make crosses for our next generation, and we keep as many as we can. And by soloing those pups, it helps us evaluate quicker and decide which one's staying, which one's going.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Whereas if you're just throwing them in a pack, yeah, I'm going to know at 7-8 months what you're going to know at 14 months, you know, about that dog. So I think it helps you. You can get that dog farther along. You're going to see if it's what you want faster, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's just something else, you know, that I wanted to mention.
Yeah. Derek, is that part of your coal process as far as the way you do as
yeah.
well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. excuse me. I got one now. She'll be a year in January. She started probably about 5-6 months old, and as soon as she was out of the pen, she was, you know, I'd make sure she'd pack, you know, right there. But she has been nothing done but solo. And then, and we can tell from that, you know, if we want to make that cross again, you know. So that's a big part of it, is making sure they have that dependency at a young age and see if that's what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that is important, Mike, is when we breed dogs, we try to lay crosses on top of crosses. So we don't really look at a cross as two independent dogs. We try to think of breeding a family to a family.
That's right.
And that's a whole nother conversation. But if you're not soloing the dog, you don't know what you're really breeding. Mm-mm. So
that's right. Man, I love it, man. That's awesome, because that is, like, anybody that's listening that knows me knows I love a solo race. I love training solo. And you know, if I had enough education and time, I would get a whole lot of people together, and I would write a book on it. You know, not about Mike Green, but about just the solo program. And man, I think I would give it a Spanish
name. And that's another publish it. That's right. And if you sometimes people are surprised when they come to my house or Derek's house or Tim or Cody or whoever, and they don't see 25 dogs.
That's right.
You know, they're like,
I'm telling you, that's it.
I mean, that last litter I had sold a couple pups, and the guys came to pick them up, and they're like, "Where's all your dogs, man?" Like, they're thinking there's going to be 25 dogs here, and I always tell them the same thing: don't keep more than you can run the right way.
That's right.
And they kind of ponder what right way. What's that mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like at my house now, I've got an older male, he's 3, and then I've got a 10-month-old, that's it. With ball and with me coaching high school baseball, he's just in the kids and the kids' activities, and you just don't have time. And, you know, that's all the time I have, and I'm not going to keep more if I can't do it the right way, you know, because I just cannot stand seeing them sit there, you know what I mean? And the potential that's in that kennel, you know, I just can't seeing one left out and me not getting to put the time into it.
Yep.
Yeah, that time is important, and dividing that up right for your dogs. And when you have a solo program, you can't keep if you're going, like you said, I like what you said, to be able to train them and run them right, because, you know, to do it right, because you can't. I mean, you just don't, there's not enough hours in the day, there's not enough days in the week, and so on and so forth. And talking about your time, you know, like me, I've got 9 head down there, you know, and I can work with 9 to 12 pretty easily. But, mm-hmm. you know, 25, no, I would stress myself out because, well, I wouldn't have them because I would start culling. And my cull age is fluctuates, but for the most part, if I get that puppy started at 6 months old, if by 8 months old that puppy's not solo in the way that I want it to, and I'm thinking there again, like you said, breeding families and looking back and saying this, you know, what came before it. And not that it's a bad dog by no stretch of the imagination, but it's just not suiting me if at 8 or 9 months old it's not bringing that rabbit around with enough opportunity, and I'm going to give them the opportunity. If they're not, then I think it's a smart for a houndsman to go ahead and call that one out, get it to a good somewhere where it's going to be happy. And you know it's a good dog. It just is not quite, you know, filling the holes up that you want it to fill up. So, And I think that's smart to do on that end. So with we've talked about training here, and also let's look at the raising the pups, and taking that pup, not all the way to a rabbit dog, but let's look at your process, guys, on raising that litter, picking the pups that you want to pick out of that litter, and then getting them started and moving them towards that. What's that look like for you from litter to litter?
Well, I'll let Mitch take that. He picks out all the pups.
Man, I need him to come over here and do that for me.
Yeah.
Which one, Mitch?
You fail more than you succeed, for sure.
Yeah.
So what we do is, we try to, like I said, we try to keep as many in-house as we can. I'm real big on knowing what I want to be able to evaluate the litter mates into my next generation. I think that shows a lot of consistency in your gene pool. So the only way you can do that is either to have firsthand knowledge of the litter, or, you know, they go to places of people you can trust that tell you what the dogs do. So number one is we don't make any crosses for other people. Even though we do sell the extra ones from time to time, everything's kind of done for a plan. So I believe that training starts really early. To me, when they come out of the box and you're letting them out, letting them run around, that's training. You know, I see so many guys raise pups and they live on the wire.
Oh, yeah.
And eight weeks old, you know, somebody comes to get the pup and the pup's never felt grass before. It's never smelt nothing. So to me, really important to socialize them puppies. And, you know, if we're just talking about the training part, so from that socialization, usually around 4 or 5, 5 and a half months, somewhere in that neighborhood. The last several years, you know, we've got into using a training pen. A friend of ours has really nice pen. It's got a lot of wild rabbits in it, and they get solo started for the most part.
Yeah.
And he's kind of got the setup like you're talking about. You know, you got a little tiny, small sight chasing pen.
Yeah.
And then he's got a bigger pen, and then even another pen that's even bigger than that. So they kind of graduate. Most of them start the first, you know, day or two they're there, usually, you know, high percentage of them will. And, you know, when we get them back, you know, we like to evaluate them, you know, and make sure that they're going to know how to pack, like to run them with something that they can beat, you know, that old retired dog that's straight and true.
Yeah.
And, you know, once we see that, you know, with them little puppies, you know, once they mature into that 8, 9 month old area, now we start putting more and more solo time into them.
Yeah.
You know, I will run litter mates together if I don't see somebody killing the other pup, and it's positive. You know, if it's a good competition. But as far as the puppy process, you know, that's it in a nutshell, Derek. Did I leave anything out?
No. That's about it. I let Mitch pick all the pups. He picks them out. He's got a pretty good percentage there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, I'm gonna video call him. I'm gonna have him on message, be like, "What you think? This one or this one?" he says, "How's he acting on grass? He runs around." yeah, and it's great to have that teamwork, you know, for you between you guys and being kennel partners, you know, and Heat 'Em Up Kennels is better for that. You know, I personally don't have a kennel partner here. I've got a lot of people that I run with and talk to, but all the decisions that are made here, I make. But it wasn't always that way. I mean, I've got people out there, Kurt Douglas and others that, you know, he helped me years ago, you know, getting into this bloodline and, you know, going from great dogs and medium/medium speed style dogs, you know, to where I'm at today. You know, he was great in helping me there. Many other guys over the years, I mean, I can name off some people that you'd never heard of before, old timers and stuff, but mainly it was my pap and all of them, you know, that helped me through the years to be able to know a dog. So now, you know, we make the decisions here as far as what we keep. And, you know, you get to that point. Now we know not every pup in every litter makes a world beater. I mean, it's just the way that it is. But, you know, I'm like you. I raise for myself. And then what I've got left over, I sell. That's just what I do. And so, but I'm breeding for me first. And I'm breeding for the future, you know, obviously. But a lot of times people say, well, which one are you keeping? Well, whatever's left. You know, I'll just take the last pick. I don't have to have the first pick. I'll take the last pick. Because when we're looking at a 4-week-old, 6-week-old, 8-week-old, 9-week-old puppy, everybody's eating and pooping. So, you know, but then we, as they grow up and as they start to grow and they're looking, you're looking for those different characteristics in that, the trainability, the attentiveness, going back to what you breed for. You know, we breed for brains, you know, brains, handle, hunt, you know, control and speed is last. I like,
Mike, I want to throw something out there real quick, Mike.
Go ahead.
You mentioned brains, and I'll give your listeners something to do with an 6-8-week-old pup. Because you'll hear people say, oh, well, it's just a crapshoot. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, you're going to get it wrong. But I tell you something that is real daggone effective. That, and I don't tell a lot of people about this, but, you know, we should always pay it forward.
Now you're going to tell about 20,000, so go ahead.
Yeah. So, and I can hear one buddy of ours right now saying, I can't believe you told him about the brush pile.
Hold on, let me get a pen and paper and record. Yeah. Oh, I am recording, so let's go.
When you get them pups really hammering hard food, okay, if you take those pups and out in the yard there around the kennel, and you make you some little brush piles, and don't use anything that's got big thorns or nothing, and make them kind of loose, okay? Come feeding time, start putting little tiny bowls of food out in them brush piles.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll learn so much about that litter. And then you start mixing it up. One brush pile one day don't have no food in it. But guess what that pup will learn to do? Well, I'll go check the next one. He's diving through that one. Then he's diving through the next one. Until, and then by the end of it, I've got food in one brush pile. They don't know which one.
Yeah.
And cool. I can tell you right now, it ain't foolproof. I mean, I've struck out. It ain't, you know, because it doesn't tell you everything. But what I've found is it will tell you a lot of independence about those dogs, about those puppies. It'll tell you who's got confidence, brains. It tells you a little bit of everything. It tells you some grit because their skin's so thin that those, even if you ain't using thorny brush, if you use tree limbs, it don't feel good. You know, poking you as you're climbing through there. And, you know, I can tell you right now, the just off the top of my head, the male that Derek's been running, the spot dog, he was one of them ones in that litter of 8. He come out that door, buddy, and he was a digging, no regard for his body. 6-7 weeks old, he's finding that dog food in them brush piles, you know. And I can tell you right now, he goes, you know, so. It translated, you know, his best attribute probably is independent grit hunt. Wouldn't you say, Derek?
Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
So it don't tell you everything. And right now there's a friend of ours just saying, I cannot believe you told people about the brush pile.
Hey, friend, we appreciate it.
Yeah. But anyways, I just think we should try to pay it forward and
absolutely.
Nobody knows everything. And no. If you're not constantly trying to learn, you're standing still.
Yeah.
And there's no, this sport here, this lifestyle being a houndsman, you're never going to master it. If you think you mastered it, that means you definitely haven't. So,
yeah.
You know, I think the only way we learn is through each other. So,
I like
anyways,
that.
Didn't get you off track here.
No, yeah, that's exactly what we want to talk about. Stuff like that is valuable. Pap used to take a handful of feed and he would scatter it out in the grass. You know, he would just throw it out in the grass, and
what got me to doing this. My pap did the same thing.
Pretty smart, man. That's pretty smart. Just piling it up, and you know, just making them kind of look for what they're wanting, and then that drive. You know, they're wanting it. And then once they, you know, I tell my buddy Ken, and Ken's great. He I talk to him often, but he believes like I do. If a dog doesn't fall in love with a rabbit, you'll never get the maximum potential out of that dog. If it's, you know, whether that love is to catch the rabbit or just run the rabbit, whatever it is, you got to get them to love what they're doing. Yeah, absolutely. Having that heart and that drive, and then the intelligence to really think that through, you know. So, I think that's awesome. So let me ask you this right here. This is a little bit of changing gear, but still along the same lines. So lots of definitions of a jump dog in the bigger world, lots of definitions. To you guys at Heat 'Em Up Kennel, what is it? What is a jump dog for you? What is it to you?
Go ahead, Derek.
A jump dog to me, well, it's a dog that could probably find a rabbit in a Walmart parking lot.
That's my man.
I mean, a jump dog to me, it does not matter what time of the day you take that dog out. He or she will find you a rabbit. And, you know, there's some dogs that hunt very, very well, but they're not jump dogs.
Absolutely. You know? Non-productive. You
know? Yes, non-productive. And they look good doing it, but they just don't produce that much. But there's a few that, you know, will pull a rabbit, you know, no matter where you take them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've been lucky. We've been lucky in the past and right now that we've got, you know, we've had several of those dogs. You know, not everyone's like that, but we've been lucky that we've been very fortunate that we've had some here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they just don't, they don't grow on trees, do they, Mike?
No.
And, or Derek, you know,
no, they don't.
No.
You know, and I tell you, if you watch a dog that you think's a jump dog, and then you try to define that. Okay. And by the way, if there was one trait I could isolate in our breeding program, it'd be that.
Yeah.
It's the hardest thing. It's the hardest trait to isolate and breed consistently.
Absolutely.
Because really what you end up doing is just breeding for a hunt and hope they have the quote-unquote knack. And if you watch a true jump dog, and there's one laying on this couch beside me, and she's 11 now, but the princess dog. And you, to this day, you take her at 11 years old and you watch her. She's not looking for rabbit tracks.
Mm-mm.
She's hunting body scent, and she knows where to look. Like those dogs, they look for where a rabbit is. They know where to go. They use their nose in the air a lot. You hardly ever see them with their nose tail gone for a long time. You know, if their nose is down, their tail's gone, there's probably a rabbit getting jumped here in just a second.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see them, you know, and I'm not, there's nothing wrong with a dog that has a nose and can work up that track into a jump. That's fine. But a jump dog is already going to find that rabbit out there, yep. You know? So it's hard to define, you know, like the question you're asking, most people have seen it. They think it's a lot less of it than what it is. You know, I mean, a lot of times, you know, if a dog just jumps some rabbits, they think, well, that's a jump dog, you know, man. I mean, I can count you know, in all these years, you know, on a couple hands of dogs, I would say were really true jump dogs, know?
Yeah.
And every cross we've made, even the outcrosses, the number one thing I'm looking for is that dog a jump dog? Is his mommy and dad, did his mommy and daddy jump rabbits? What was their jump ability? What was their hunt? What was their heart in jumping rabbits? What was the siblings like? Did the siblings have any dogs that were big time jump dogs? And so you try to breed for it. To me, it's the hardest thing in the game to breed for.
It is. It is. And that's where I believe that they are. A lot of people will disagree, and that's fine. But I don't believe that a jump dog is trained. I believe a jump dog is born. I just don't think. I'm not saying that a dog can't learn that process, but if they do learn that process, it was in them to learn, and it goes back to their traits, you know, and their DNA, what's been passed forward. And as they mature, those things click as they get older. But so many guys out there agree or disagree with what we say here, which is fine. That's what makes the world go round. I can take you to one of my spots down here that is just eat up with swamp rabbits. And I mean, every stump is covered in swamp rabbit crap, because I don't know if y'all know, but swamp rabbits get up on stumps and that's where they crap at. I'm like, you'll have a stump and it'll just be heaped up. I mean, it'll just be heaped up. And I'll tell you why that is. A lot of people and listeners that are out there, and you can email me at mike@joydogfood.com. If you don't believe me or you don't agree with me, I'll send you the information. But I contacted the Missouri Wildlife, Commission, and they've got a lot of swamp rabbits out there. I went out there deer hunting and stuff, and I learned a little bit about this. Swamp rabbits crap on stumps because they live in mostly moist, low-lying areas. They get up on a stump or something high, and that's where they crap, because the water level generally doesn't get up that high. It's not because they don't want to crap on wet ground, but they'll leave it up there. And those rabbits only digest 30% at a time of what they eat. So it's like baling hay. They'll come back in the tough of the winter and they'll eat what's on the stump. And that's how they survive.
Really?
Yep. That's how they survive.
You've given me a heck of an education on swamp rabbits today, Mike.
You come down here, brother, they'll give you a better one.
Yeah. Holy cow.
But it's true. But back to my point before I ran that rabbit, when you go to I can take you to a place that's just eat up with them. I mean, they're everywhere. You can stand there and literally you'll watch them, because swamp rabbits move around a lot during the day. I don't know why they do it, but they're just always moving about. Well, I can take your dog there. You say, I got a dog here that really can't jump a lot of rabbits. I take you there. When you leave, you'll think you got a jump dog. If jumping a large amount or a high quantity of rabbits is how you define a jump dog. You see what I mean? Because the mediocre, quote, rabbit hunting dog goes in there, you're going to get a lot of jumps because there's a lot of rabbits there. Lots of rabbits. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I got another spot that is, there's like two.
In
50 acres,
there's a lot of those spots. There's a lot of those kind of spots around here.
So you got to have that dog that's going to go look, know what they're looking for, understand rabbitat, what we call it down here, and have rabbit sense, what the old timers used to call it, and be able to go and do that. And that for me is the one. It's like Derek said, the one that if there's one hiding behind a tire in Walmart parking lot, he's going to find him because he searched out every tire out there and jumps that rabbit, and away we go. That's to me.
That's why I've always been drawn to that kind of dog, Mike, because we just don't have here in West Virginia some outrageous population of rabbits. You have to go find a rabbit, and so if you have a dog that's going to doink around and blow holes in feeder tracks, you're probably not going to jump a whole lot of rabbits, So I think a lot of times guys develop what they want based on where they live and what they run, you know?
They do.
I mean, that's understandable. It's understandable.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. We're not criticizing, if just you, talking about the definition.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
If you grew up in Kansas, a cottontail hunter in Kansas, I mean, you would be looking at things differently than what me and Derek look at them, yeah. You know? When you're seeing 30 rabbits in a morning, you know, when we're seeing three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, when I was in Missouri, it was like rabbits daring you to turn a dog out. I mean, they were just, yeah. They were everywhere. Like, I dare you to run me, you know.
Yeah, where
they're everywhere.
Where they're having the world hunt this year is insane. Awesome running. I mean, they got a ton of rabbits.
Yeah.
The UKC world, I mean, there'll be some awesome running that weekend out there. So I think it's the southern, kind of mid-southern part of Missouri where it's at.
Yeah, and that's going to be awesome, you know. And it's good to have these places like that. But, you know, like I know, you put the wrong dog in the right place, and or the right dog in the wrong place, yeah. And it could cost mm-hmm. you the hunt. And so, transitioning a little bit, now that you brought up the UKC World Hunt, you are a UKC World Champion of 2022, right? And
yes, sir.
So that's awesome, and that's a great accomplishment. It's fortunate to have the 2023 World Champion on here just a few weeks ago, and so that was an awesome interview with Brian Hartram and Dusty
Irwin.
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
My bad, Dusty. And so. but you know, you guys have Mitch, you have won the world in 2022. You got national championships up under, Clash winner up under you. A lot of people can follow you as far as that goes, and opportunities. So tell me this right here. There's a lot we can say about field trialing in the UKC Hunting Beagle format. There's a lot that we can say, and a lot of people out there can say a lot of stuff. Give me not a specific win. But Mitch, give me a specific event or situation in the field that really brings to mind, and what you were really happy to see happen. It, maybe it was a win, maybe it was a loss, but something that you really remember well that helped you to move forward in field trialing.
You mean like a my fondest memory type of thing?
Yeah, fondest memory. Something that really helped you. Maybe it was, I mean, like I know I got whooped one time, and it helped me, you know, move forward in my training program and things like that. Mm-hmm. We'll get to mm-hmm. your fondest memory in a minute. And
well, to answer that question, I would have to go back to probably 2007, so in that era. When Heat 'Em Up Keita won the Hound of the Year that year, a good friend of mine who's passed on, Bill McFarland, we competed against each other, we hadn't been able to run Keita and Shenango Star against each other. And, I always respected Bill's line of dogs because they hunted like I wanted. And Keita was a tremendous jump dog, tremendous hunt. And that's why we kind of built everything around her that you see us running today.
Okay.
But, the reason I bring this up is because I got to draw, those two bitches drew each other at the world hunt that year. Heat 'Em Up Keita and Shenango Star. And, or me and Bill was like, all right, you know, going to see what these two do together. You know what I mean? And went out there, and you want to talk about two dogs. It was one of the only times I saw dogs jump rabbits with Keita rabbit for rabbit.
Yeah.
The other dog would have been Jason Vandergriff's Izzy dog. But, and it was such a performance. And back then, you were eliminated if you didn't have plus points.
Yep.
And we ended up with like 600 circle. We'd never seen a rabbit, never got a line, hunting a railroad bed. So we had three jumps apiece, and neither dog got to move on, which was a ridiculous rule that we've since fixed. But back then, it was what it was.
Right.
But I tell you why that was a turning point, Mike, because when I'm out there in the cast, I'm evaluating. That's one thing I like about trials, is I'm evaluating everything around me.
Yeah.
I'm not watching just my dog. A lot of guys just watch their dog. That's all they remember. And what stuck with me is I said, that's what we're going to do. Because I knew Star's mommy was an awesome jump dog as well, the Bootsy dog. And she was out of a dog called Pipeyard Buckshot Blackie, who was another jump dog. And it clicked in my mind, I'm going to make this happen. So, I asked Bill about some of Star's littermate brothers. And I liked a couple of them, but they wasn't Star. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, the following year, he started running a pup out of Star. And that pup drew another friend of mine and Derek's, Bill Mills. And he called me and says, I went to hunt this morning and got my butt kicked. I said, well, that happens, I said, who'd you hunt with? He said, oh, I drew McFarland. I said, I bet that was a good time because Bill's always fun to be with.
Sure.
And he said, I tell you, he's got a male pup. He said, he's unreal. He said, and he kicked my tail. I said, is it the one out of Star? And he said, yeah. And that ended up being Shenango Trigger.
Yeah.
And I called McFarland that evening. I said, when Keita comes in heat, she was just coming off her a litter of puppies. I said, when she comes in heat, I said, her next litter's Trigger. And he said, he's just young. He really, he's never been bred, like he was kind of skeptical. I said, no, the guy that told me what he saw, I trust him, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
That cross ended up, that cross ended up being what we based everything on that you see today, all these years later.
Yeah.
And it all came from that one trial where you asked me what trial had the most influence on what we do.
Yeah.
That would have been it. There was a light bulb moment there. I wanted to line up those bitch lines.
Yeah.
I wanted to put Keita and Star in the same pedigree. Their running styles were really similar too. Like very similar. The way they worked a check was similar. A little bit edgy, a little bit rough, but not bad. And so everything was common. I don't like breeding really uncommon stuff. I want them stylistically, I want them to be real similar. But I'm probably rambling now, but that's how I would answer that question, Mike.
Awesome. That's a great answer. Derek, do you have a moment?
It was probably, I'm trying to think what year, probably 2009. I had a little female. Her name was Heat 'em Up Tootsie. We went up to Nationals. It's when the old state race, we used to have the state race where they take the top 16 and then you'd run it off each state. Then one dog would represent a state at Nationals. Then they had a runoff for the national championship. Well, that year, she ended up winning it. She ended up, I think it was 2009, which she was out of, Keita and, Little Mighty Ozzy. And then turn around the next day, the next 2 days of the national hunt, she got second in the grand division at Nationals that same year. So that was pretty cool. She was a year and a half at the time when she did that. She was real young. That was probably one of my highlights when I was, I'm thinking like, oh, this work that, I've been putting into this dog is actually paying off. And that's probably one of my highlights right there.
Yeah.
She probably, Mike, anybody that's had any success, at some point there was some dog they were fortunate enough to own that showed you, well, this is different. This is a different kind of dog here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Derek, I bet she was the one that showed you, this is a little different than what I've.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. This is a different animal right here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she was, I mean, she was, to this day, she's the strongest 13-inch dog I've ever seen. I mean, she could do things that 13-inch dogs should not be able to do,
Yeah.
And I can remember the day you came over to get her, Bowen.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about a dog getting ran. Now that young fella, I said, man, ain't gonna be nothing left of that dog here. it was like summer football, man. They were two a days.
We were two a days, nighttime. I mean, that was before I was married, before I had kids. I was out of school, and that's all I did. I ran that dog. and she was special.
I remember that was when the Garmin's first come out, remember? And Derek was one of the first people to have the Garmin in our group, you know. And I remember he would tell me about these miles per hour, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I can remember him saying, I don't know if this is good or bad, he says, but this pup solo will do 6, 7, 8 mile an hour on the, on a big spring buck rap. It was springtime. And I didn't know. Well, nobody had, you know, Garmins or nothing.
Yeah.
And looking back on the numbers, and I don't pay a lot of attention to that.
Sure.
But it was different. You know what I mean? The way she could drive a track was pretty pretty incredible. But.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. That and having those moments, you know, those key moments, you know, that take you to the next level, that get you to realize, you know, this is what I'm doing. And you're absolutely right. It's a lot of times it's that one dog that shows you this is how you want to do it. And then you start using that as your yardstick or measuring stick, you know.
And I don't know if you know this, Derek, but kind of a nugget for about Tootsie. I made the decision to breed Keita younger than I would have liked to. you know, I wanted to see what she would produce. I didn't like some of the other crosses we had made. So I bred her, you know, she was 3, and I really was up in the air on it. You know, do I trial her another year? Because once I start breeding females, I don't really trial them.
Yeah.
And it just takes, the second litter especially takes it out of them. But anyways, I went ahead and did it. And that day that Tootsie kicked everybody's butt, I was like, I made the right call there.
You know?
That was because I was really kind of bummed that I bred her so young. And, yeah, when that happened, I was like, "Phew! I'm glad that worked out." You know.
Yeah.
I remember the day that you said, "Well, why don't you just come get this pup over here?" You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you was gonna keep her, and you said,
"Yeah."
Well, she was probably about two months old. Well, not 3 months old.
Yeah.
When I got her.
I think she was 3 months. She was my pick of the litter. I'll tell you why she was my pick of the litter, because neighbors had cats. And that pup would go find them cats. I don't care if she had to tear down a daggone razor wire fence to get to them cats, the neighbor's cats. And I mean, she was on them things. And, you know, I was like, my gosh, that pup's got some heart, you know? And I'm like, that's the one right there. And,
oh, yeah.
And at that time I had taken an administration job, and I thought, I'm not going to be able to run this pup this spring like I normally run. And I thought, yeah, who more deserving, you know, that is going to run her than Derek and Tim. And so that's how all that kind of transpired.
Yeah. Well, you know, that process is awesome. And I love to hear that. And I hope the viewers are enjoying that too, because, you know, a lot of people have similar stories, you know, but every story is different. Every chapter is different in everybody's book, you know, as you go forward. And so with all the success that you guys have had and raising and training, your breeding program, your solo program, your field trial, ups and downs over the years, through, whether it's, at home, just running for pleasure and just hanging out and running together, or whether you're in the field in the competition mindset, it's all about the hound, and it's all about making them better and giving them the opportunity to be better. And that's what's wonderful. And that's what I've learned here talking to you guys tonight, is that. So, just real quick before we finish up right here, what's the future of Heat 'Em Up Kennels right now? What do you got going on? Litters on the ground. What's your future looking like?
Well, you've got, I don't know, this will be the fourth or fifth generation that we've raised, but, you know, Tika had pups this past year. They're just 6, 7 months old. you know, we're seeing, you know, Spot and Rep have produced some really nice young dogs. So, you know, the future will probably be a mix of dogs from the superstar dog, Keita, or I'm sorry, Tika, Sweet Tea that won the Clash, Rep, the Gus dog that we won Nationals with. So really those 3 males and those 3 females is kind of what we're, you know, see what happens here in this next phase. So,
yeah. Derek, when you think you're going to get the confidence to make the pick on the one?
Dude, he makes – he's good at picking. Don't let him out there.
Yeah. Derek's like, my goal is to pick the one. That's the yeah, that's my goal.
That's right. I just – yeah, just one.
Well, that's awesome, guys. Well, I can tell you guys have a great relationship and a great working relationship when it comes to the hounds there. You're not a nobody. You're a somebody, and not just in the beagle world, but just within your relationship there with each other and the trio that you have there with Derek and Tim and Mitchell, y'all all together. And I think that it's great for that. So I'm going to give you guys the last word on this.
Go ahead, Derek.
We've surrounded ourselves with some good guys, not only good biglers, but just good people. You know, we're not just hunting, you know, partners, you know, we're all friends, you know, we hang out, you know, we'll go to different places, even if it's not, you know, have to do with the dog hunting, you know, we're always, you know, together, you know, we're always open to ideas, you know, we're always feeding off each other. So, no, I mean, everybody's all, we've got one goal and that just is just to compete, you know, I mean, just stay, you know, stay competing. And everybody's on the same page with that.
Cool deal. Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I'd leave your listeners with this. Be a houndsman first.
That's right.
Be a houndsman first. You know, don't get so wrapped up in trialing and winning and, you know, enjoy the dog. Enjoy the sunset. Enjoy running that dog and hunting that dog. The process, you know, I think some people in the sport, they get so wrapped up in the trial part that they miss the forest for the trees, you know what I mean? And so, you know, be a houndsman first. And, you know, I appreciate you having us on, Mike. And like Derek said, you know, our kennel, you know, I'm proud of the guys that that I'm partners with. And, you know, we've it's not just about winning trophies. You know, yeah. We're just trying to enjoy a love for beagles that we all have and reproduce something on our line of dogs that we want. You know, if nobody else would like them, we'd still keep doing what we're doing.
That's what it's all about. That's right.
So, but definitely appreciate you having us on.
Yeah. Well, I just want to thank you guys for coming on and having a great conversation. And for the listeners out there, I hope you guys enjoyed this and, because it's been a really good conversation. I really appreciate you. Joy Dog Food appreciates you coming on and being a part of our Working Dog, Fueled by Joy Working Dog podcast. This airs every Wednesday morning. And so you guys have been great. Great conversation. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to the opportunity to take you guys out on the swamp rabbit hunt down here. And you get where you can.
Absolutely.
Break and come. I think you're only like maybe 6 hours away, man.
Yeah.
Just breaking, come down
probably
here.
Probably take you up on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Going
awesome.
To hold you to it. Going to hold you to it, Mike.
Well, come January 2nd, when all my property, when deer season shuts down and all my properties open back up, I've got about, well, I'm not going to say, I got a lot of land. And so when you guys get ready to come down, you just shoot me a message, give me a call, and we'll line it up. And we'll, I don't know if you've ever pushed a rabbit 750 yards. I guess you have on hair, swamp rabbits, they'll take you for a ride. And it's really a fun ride to watch and sit on the tailgate and just listen. And,
We'll do it.
I'm looking forward to you guys being able to come down and do that. So, guys, I appreciate you. Just hang tight right quick. Let me close this out. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to thank each and every one of you for listening, tuning in to us on the Fueled by Joy Working Dog podcast. I'm Mike Green, and I just want to tell each and every one of you that Joy Dog Food, myself, we really appreciate you listening each and every week. And I hope and pray that each and every one of you have a wonderful and happy Merry Christmas, and God bless each one of you.
All I want in this whole life, a little red house and a country wife, a picnic table out. sound like much, but it sure is heaven to me. A big bathtub in my bathroom, microwave, dishwasher too. The folks say hi when they pass on the street. I clean pair of socks every day of the week. A big soft chair for when I'm old. Tackle box and a fishing pole. I don't care about a fortune or fame. I just don't wanna know my mailman's name. At Christmas time, I'm gonna leave him a gingerbread cookie. It don't sound like much, but it sure is heaven to me. Every now and then we go on a vacation. Big radio and a country station. Hot dog. Big beer stored on every floor, slip and slide and a guard.